and show a considerable decline in their political status and ability to attract younger wives. Status among the Aceh males may peak somewhere between 25 and 50, corresponding closely with their hunting prowess. Older Aceh, Yanomamo, and Tiwi men command respect, status, and awe from younger men because they have survived so many club fights, spear fights, and axe fights. Men maintain status well into middle age if they manage to survive the onslaught of aggression from other men that long. Similar trends tied to age are observed in contemporary Western societies. One indication of men's resources over their lifetime in contemporary Western society is actual monetary income. Unfortunately, no worldwide statistics are available on men's and women's resources as a function of age. A particular income distribution by age in the United States, however, has been found repeatedly over the years. The distribution of men's average income in the United States, broken down by age, shows that income tends to be quite low among men in their teens and early 20s. In the decade between the ages of 25 and 34, men's income attains only two-thirds of its eventual peak. Not until the decades from ages 35 to 54 does men's income in the United States achieve its peak. From age 55 on, men's income declines, undoubtedly because some men retire, become incapacitated, or lose the ability to command their previous salaries. These income averages conceal great variability because some men's resources continue to increase throughout their old age, whereas other men remain poor throughout their lives. Because older men tend to have more status and resources than younger men, men and women of the same age differ on average in their value as mates. In the same decade, between the ages of 16 and 25, when women peak in fertility and reproductive value, men's income and status are typically the lowest that they will be in their adult lives. When most women between the ages of 35 and 44 are rapidly approaching the end of their reproductive years, most men in the same decade are just approaching the peak of their earning capacity. To the extent that the central ingredients of desirability are a woman's reproductive value and a man's resource capacity, men and women of comparable age are not typically comparable in desirability. Greater variability, which is the other critical difference between the value of women and men as mates at different ages, renders age per se a less important factor for men in mating. Men's occupational status in Western societies ranges from janitor or burger flipper to CEO, college president, or successful entrepreneur. Men at the same age vary in income from the nickels and dimes of a homeless person to the billions of a Bill Gates, Mark Zuckerberg, or Warren Buffett. Between the ages of 20 and 40, men diverge dramatically in their ability to accrue resources. These trends fail, however, to reveal the tremendous variability in the individual circumstances of women who do the choosing. From a woman's perspective, her particular circumstances, not the averages, carry the most weight. Some middle-aged women prefer older men, not because of their resources, but because they believe that older men value them more than men their own age. Among the Akka of Africa, for example, men who achieve high status and garner many resources during their lives contribute little to the direct care of their children when they marry. In contrast, Akka men who attain only low status and few resources for a wife and children compensate by spending more time directly caring for the children. One key indicator of a father's investment, for example, is how many minutes a day he spends holding an infant, which is an expensive activity in terms of both calories consumed and other activities foregone. Holding protects an infant from environmental dangers, temperature changes, accidents, and aggression from others. Akka men who maintain positions of status in the group hold their infants an average of 30 minutes per day. Men who lack positions of status, in contrast, hold their infants more than 70 minutes per day. Although women typically prefer men with status and resources, a man's willingness to parent constitutes a valuable resource that can partially compensate for the lack of other qualities. Some women, because of the tremendous economic resources they command, may not need to select a man based on his external acquisitions. The desirability of men must be evaluated by means of the psychological adaptations of women, and these mechanisms are highly sensitive to circumstances. This is not to deny the importance of average trends. Indeed, selection has produced such trends over thousands of generations of human evolutionary history. Our evolved psychological mechanisms include not only those that promote mate choices that are specific and typical of each sex, but also adaptations that tailor our choices over our lifetime to the individual circumstances in which we find ourselves. Earlier death of men. Human mating mechanisms account for the puzzling finding that men die faster and earlier than women in all societies. Selection has been harder on men than on women in this respect. Men live shorter lives than women and die in greater numbers of more causes at every point in the life cycle. In the United States, for example, men die on average 4 to 6 years earlier than women. Men are susceptible to more infections than women and die of a greater variety of diseases than women. Men have more accidents than women, including falls, accidental poisonings, drownings, firearm accidents, car crashes, fires, and explosions. Males suffer a 30% higher mortality rate from accidents during the first 4 years of life and a 400% higher mortality from accidents by the time they reach adulthood. Men are murdered nearly 3 times as often as women. Men die taking risks more often than women. They also commit suicide roughly 3 times more often than women. The ages between 16 and 28, when mate competition reaches a strident pitch, seem especially bad for men. They suffer a mortality rate nearly 200% higher than women at this time in their lives. The reason for men's higher mortality, like that of males of many mammalian species, stems directly from their sexual psychology, and in particular from their competition for mates. The use of risky tactics of competition becomes greater as the differences in reproductive outcome become greater. Where some males monopolize more than one female, there are tremendous reproductive benefits to being a winner and tremendous reproductive penalties for being a loser. The red deer is a case in point. Male deer who grow larger bodies and larger antlers experience greater mating success on average than their smaller counterparts. They are able to beat their rivals in head-to-head competition. But their success comes at a cost to their survival. Precisely the same traits that give them their mating success lead to a greater likelihood of dying. During a cold winter with scarce resources, for example, the male is more likely to die because of a failure to obtain enough food for his larger body. Larger size may also make the male more susceptible to predation and less agile at escape. To these possibilities must be added the risk of dying directly through intersexual combat. All these risks follow from the sexual strategies of red deer, which pay off on average in the competition for mates, but also generally result in a shorter lifetime. As a rule, throughout the animal kingdom, the more polygynous the mating system, the greater the differences between the sexes in terms of mortality. Polygynous mating selects for males who take risks. Risks in competing with other males, risks in securing the resources desired by females, and risks in exposing themselves to dangers while pursuing and courting females. In a mildly polygynous mating system like our own, some men acquire multiple partners through serial marriage and affairs, and others are left mateless. Competition among men and selection by women of men high in status and resources are ultimately responsible for the evolution in males of risk-taking traits that lead to successful mating at the expense of a long life. Because the reproductive stakes are higher for men than for women, more men than women risk being shut out of mating entirely. Men who are mateless for life are more numerous than similarly mateless women in every society. In the United States, in 2015, for example, 67% of men, but only 54% of women in the 25 to 29-year-old age bracket, had never been married. In the 30 to 34-year-old age bracket, 41% of men, but only 31% of women, had never been married. These gender differences reach extremes in highly polygynous cultures, such as the Tiwi, where literally all women are married. A few men have as many as 29 wives, and therefore many men are relegated to bachelorhood. This adaptive logic suggests that the greater risk-taking, and hence greater death rate, should occur among men who are at the bottom of the mating pool, and who therefore risk getting shut out entirely. Men who are unemployed, unmarried, and young are greatly overrepresented in risky activities, ranging from gambling to lethal fights. Among homicides in Detroit in 1972, for example, 41% of adult male offenders were unemployed, compared with an unemployment rate of 11% for the whole city. 69% of the male victims and 73% of the male perpetrators were unmarried, compared with an unmarried rate of 43% in the entire city. These homicides were also disproportionately concentrated between the ages of 16 and 30. In short, men low in desirability, as indicated by being unemployed, unmarried, and young, seem especially prone to risk-taking, which sometimes becomes lethal. The point is not that killing per se is necessarily an adaptation, but rather that men's evolved sexual psychologies are designed to respond to dire mating conditions by increasing the amount of risk they are willing to take. In ancestral times, the great reproductive gains that risk-taking men generally achieved and the reproductive dead ends that usually awaited more cautious men have favored traits that yield success in competition among males at the expense of success at longevity. In the currency of sheer survival, selection through mate competition has been hard on men. A mating crisis, especially for educated women. The earlier death of men is one critical factor among several that produces a serious imbalance between the number of men relative to the number of women on the mating market, a disparity that gets more severe with time. This phenomenon is sometimes referred to as the marriage squeeze, although it occurs whether or not people seek marriage per se. Many factors affect the relative numbers. Rates of infant, childhood, adolescent, and adult mortality differ, with males dying at a faster rate throughout the lifespan. Men emigrate more often than women, leaving behind a sexual imbalance. Baby booms also cause imbalances, because women typically select men older than they are, and there are fewer men for the many women born during the boom to choose from the smaller cohort born before the baby boom. From men's perspective, those born prior to the baby boom have a relatively large pool of women to select from, since they tend to choose younger women who were born during the boom period. Far more men than women are imprisoned, creating even more imbalance in the ratio between the sexes on the mating market, and wars end men's lives far more often than women's lives, creating a surplus of women on subsequent mating markets. Divorce and remarriage patterns over the lifespan are other key causes of the marriage squeeze. Men who divorce tend to remarry women who are increasingly younger than they are. A 2013 study, for example, found that among first-time married men, only 10% married women 10 or more years younger than they were, and 5% married women who were 6 to 9 years younger. Upon remarriage, these figures jumped to 20% and 18%, so that fully 38% of remarried men had brides 6 or more years younger. It may be a cliché that men marry women increasingly younger as they age and remarry, but in this case the stereotype is verified by the statistics. These remarriage patterns are not quirks of North American countries, but rather emerge in every country for which there is adequate information. In one study of 47 countries, age affected women's chances for remarriage more than men's. For the ages of 25 to 29, the differences in remarriage by sex were slight, because young women maintain high desirability at those ages as potential mates. By the ages of 50 to 54, however, the sexes diverge dramatically in their remarriage rates. In that age bracket, in Egypt, for example, 4 times as many men as women remarry. In Ecuador, 9 times as many men as women remarry. And in Tunisia, 19 times as many men as women remarry. The mating crisis is especially pronounced among educated women. Every year, more women than men become college educated, The disparity is already prevalent across North America and Europe, and the trend is beginning to spread across the world more widely. At the University of Texas at Austin, where I teach, the 2016 student body consisted of 54% women to 46% men. This imbalance may not seem large at first blush, but if you do the math correctly, it translates into a hefty 17% more women than men in the local mating pool. A key cause of the broader mating crisis for educated women is that women seek certain qualities in committed mateships. Most women are unwilling to settle for men who are less educated, less intelligent, and less professionally successful than they are. Men are less exacting on precisely these dimensions, choosing to prioritize, for better or worse, other evolved criteria such as youth and appearance. So the initial sex ratio imbalance within the college-educated group gets worse for high-achieving women. They end up being forced to compete for the limited pool of educated men, not just with their more numerous educated rivals, but also with less educated women who men find desirable on other dimensions. The good news is that educated women and men who choose each other tend to have happier, more stable, and more affluent marriages. The sex ratio imbalance as women age is largely an outcome of the sexual psychology of men and women. At the heart of this squeeze is the decline in female reproductive value with age, which caused selection to favor ancestral men who preferred younger women as mates and to favor ancestral women who preferred somewhat older men with status and resources as mates. In the modern environment, intelligence and education predict upward mobility. Young, healthy, and attractive women act on their desires for somewhat older, high-prestige mates, attracting men who might otherwise become mates for older women. Men with status and relative wealth try to fulfill their preferences for youthful, healthy, attractive women. And because ancestral women's preferences for men with resources created a selection pressure for greater male competitiveness and risk-taking, men die at a faster rate than women, exacerbating the shortage of men. Changes in the proportion of men to women throughout life cause predictable changes in their sexual strategies. The degree of selectivity is the first strategy to shift. When there is a surplus of men, fewer men can be highly choosy, and they must settle for a less desirable mate than they would otherwise attract if the sexes were more imbalanced. A low sex ratio, in contrast, restricts women's selectivity because there are fewer men from whom to choose. These ratios affect the degree to which both sexes can translate their ideal preferences into actual mateships. Low proportions of men also cause a destabilization of marriage. A surplus of women makes many of them unable to secure strong commitments. Men with many available women can pursue casual sexual liaisons with aplomb. The current rise of the hookup culture on college campuses can be traced, in part, to the surplus of women. Changes in the ratios of men to women within the United States throughout history support this explanation, because periods of increasing divorce, as between 1970 and 1980, correspond closely to periods when there was a surplus of women on the mating market. In the late 1980s, in contrast, divorce rates for new marriages were lower than in the previous decade, coinciding with an increase in the sex ratio. At that time, American women's marital happiness was also higher than their husbands, whereas it had fallen below their husbands' marital happiness during the preceding 15 years when there was a shortage of men. The number of men pursuing business careers doubled between 1973 and the late 1980s, coinciding with the shift from a low to high ratio of males and suggesting that men were becoming more concerned with their economic success. Men's willingness to invest directly in care for their children can also be expected to increase at such times, though no evidence yet exists on this point. Men may strive to become kinder and gentler to fulfill women's mating preferences when there are relatively few available women. A shortage of available men also causes women to take greater responsibility for providing resources. One reason is that women are not able to count on provisioning from men. Furthermore, Increasing economic assets may represent a woman's strategy to increase her desirability, analogous to the dowry competition in traditional societies. Throughout history, female participation in paid employment has increased during periods of low ratios of men to women. During the 1920s, foreign-born women in the United States outnumbered foreign-born men because of restrictive immigration laws. The participation of these women in the labor force abruptly rose. The existence of fewer investing men causes women to take greater responsibility for securing their own resources. Women in mating markets of few men also intensify their competition with each other by enhancing their appearance, increasing their health-promoting behavior, and even offering sexual resources to attract men. In the sexual revolution in the United States in the late 1960s and the 1970s, for example, many women abandoned their sexual reserve and engaged in sexual relationships without requiring serious male commitment. This shift in sexual mores coincided with a period of low numbers of optimally older men for women of the baby boom. Increased competition among females with regard to their appearance, as shown by such trends as the rise of the diet industries, the mushrooming of the women's makeup and makeover industries, and the increase in cosmetic plastic surgery, including tummy tucks, liposuction, breast implants, and facelifts, also occurred in this time of a shortage of men. When there are more men competing for fewer women, the balance of power shifts to women. Women can more easily command what they want from men, and men in turn become more competitive with one another to attract and retain desirable women. Marriages and other long-term committed relationships are more stable because men are more willing to offer commitment and are less willing to leave. Men have fewer available alternatives and cannot easily pursue casual sexual goals when women are scarce. Men, therefore, increasingly compete to fulfill women's preferences for a long-term mate, especially by striving for position and showing a willingness to invest parentally. Not all changes that occur during periods of high ratios of men, however, benefit women. An important drawback is the potential at these times for increasing violence toward women. During periods of male surplus, great numbers of men are excluded from mating because there are not enough women to go around. Furthermore, men who can attract women under these conditions jealously guard them against rivals. Married women, in turn, have more alternatives, and so the threat of their leaving gains greater credibility. This circumstance may evoke sexual jealousy in husbands, promoting threats and violence to control wives and increased violence against men who threaten to lure a mate away. The existence of large numbers of men who are unable to attract a mate may also increase sexual aggression and rape. Violence often becomes the strategy of people who lack resources that would otherwise elicit voluntary compliance with their wishes. Rape is sometimes perpetrated by marginal men who lack the status and resources that women seek in long-term mates. Furthermore, the likelihood of war is apparently higher in societies with a high ratio of males than in societies with a low ratio of males, supporting the theory that competition among males intensifies at times of a surplus of males. Changes in the ratio of men to women throughout life cause corresponding shifts in mating strategies. Adolescent men often live in a world where available women are in scarce supply, because women prefer mature men with position and affluence. Young men's strategies reflect these local conditions of female scarcity because they engage in highly risky competition strategies, committing the vast majority of violent crimes of sexual coercion, robbery, battery, and murder. In one study, for example, 71% of the men arrested for rape were between the ages of 15 and 29. These are crimes of coercion against women whom men cannot attract or control through positive incentives. As men mature into their 30s and 40s, the ratio between the sexes typically tilts in their favor. If they have survived the risks and attained positions of reasonable status, they have a wider pool of potential women to choose from, and they enjoy a higher value on the mating market than they did in their youth. They are better able to attract multiple mates, whether through casual sex, extramarital sex, serial marriage, or polygyny. Men of any age who have little desirability as mates, however, do not enjoy this advantage, and some men are shut out of mating entirely. Women experience an increasingly skewed sex ratio as they age, and are more often forced to compromise their mating strategies by lowering their standards, increasing their level of intrasexual competition, securing more resources on their own, or sometimes just opting out of the mating market. These changes over time are all products of our evolved mating strategies. The prospects for lifetime mating. Human mating changes over a lifetime, from the internal stirrings of puberty through the final bequest of inheritance to a surviving spouse. Both sexes have evolved psychological mechanisms designed to solve the problems posed by change over time. Adaptations sensitive to shifts in reproductive value, status and resources, sex ratio, and mating opportunities. The changes affect women and men differently, and some of these changes are unpleasant. Women begin puberty 2 years earlier than men, but their capacity for reproduction stops 2 or 3 decades before men's. The urgency that some childless women feel as their remaining years of potential reproduction wane, the increasingly loud ticking of the biological clock, is not caused by an arbitrary custom dictated by a particular culture, but rather reflects a psychological adaptation attuned to a reproductive reality. A woman's reproductive value over time affects not only her own sexual strategies, but those of the men in her social environment, including her regular mate and other potential mates. When women are young, their partners guard them intensely, clinging tightly to the valuable reproductive resource they have successfully secured. The intense guarding closes off a woman's opportunities for affairs, and women see it as a sign of a man's commitment or insecurity, depending on circumstances. The sex lives of many couples are initially electrifying, made more so by the presence of interested rivals. With each passing year, however, the frequency of intercourse declines as women's reproductive value declines. Episodes of intense jealousy gradually wane. Men become increasingly dissatisfied, and they show less affection to their wives. Women dislike this diminished attention from their mates and become increasingly irritated and upset about being neglected. Simultaneously, men express mounting distress about the demands of their mates for time and attention. As women get older, men loosen the grip of guarding, and a higher and higher proportion of women pursue extramarital affairs, reaching a maximum as women approach the end of their reproductive years. Whereas for men, affairs are often motivated by the desire for sexual variety, for women, affairs are motivated more by emotional goals and may represent an effort to switch mates while they are still reproductively vibrant. Women seem to know that their desirability on the mating market will be higher if they leave their husbands sooner rather than later. After menopause, women switch their effort toward parenting and grandparenting, aiding the survival and reproduction of their descendants rather than continuing to reproduce directly. Women pay for their reproductive strategy of early and rapid reproduction in the currency of a shorter period of fertility. Changes in men over a lifetime, like those of male chimpanzees, are more variable in the currencies of mating success. Men who increase their status and prestige remain highly desirable over the years. Men who fail to accrue resources and status become increasingly sidelined in the field of mating. Roughly half of all married men pursue some extramarital mating over their lifetime, and for those who do, liaisons occur at the expense of sex with their wives. Some men continue throughout life to compete for new mates, divorcing older wives and marrying younger women. Long attributed by traditional scientists to the fragile male ego, to psychosexual immaturity, to male menopause, or to a culture of youth, men's effort to mate with younger women as they age instead reflects a universal evolved desire that does not go away. One startling byproduct of the differences in mating strategies of the sexes over the lifetime is that men die at an earlier age than women. This is a predictable consequence of the greater risk-taking and intrasexual competition of men as they pursue the status and resources that bring about success in mating. With increasing age, the ratio of men to women becomes increasingly skewed, resulting in a surplus of women, especially among those with higher education. For women who re-enter the mating market, the sex ratio imbalance becomes worse with each passing year. Both sexes have evolved mechanisms designed to shift strategies depending on changes in the sex ratio. Given all the changes that befall men and women over their lifetimes, it is remarkable that in fact 50% of them manage to remain together through thick and thin. The lifelong convergence of interests between two genetically unrelated individuals may be the most extraordinary feat in the evolutionary story of human mating. Just as we have evolved mechanisms that draw us into conflict, we have adaptations that enable us to live harmoniously with the other sex. My lab's massive cross-cultural study, for example, found that as men and women age, they place less value on physical appearance in a mate and more value on enduring qualities such as dependability and having a pleasing disposition, qualities important for long-term mating success. The adaptations that promote this strategic harmony between the sexes, just as much as the mechanisms that produce strife, stem from the adaptive logic of human mating. 10. Harmony between the sexes. Everything that every individual has ever done in all of human history and prehistory establishes the minimum boundary of the possible. The maximum, if any, is completely unknown. Jerome Barco, Leda Cosmidas, and John Tooby, The Adapted Mind. Understanding human mating requires recognizing that our strategies are multiple, flexible, and contingent on context, culture, and personal condition. Our complex psychological adaptations designed by a long history of evolution give us a versatile strategic repertoire for coping with the challenges of mating. With this repertoire, we tailor our mating decisions to individual and social circumstances in a valiant effort to fulfill our desires and, ideally, fulfill the desires of special others. In the mating marketplace, no behavior is inevitable or genetically preordained, neither infidelity nor monogamy, neither sexual violence nor sexual tranquility, neither jealous guarding nor sexual indifference. Men are not doomed to have affairs because of an insatiable lust for sexual variety. Women are not doomed to dismiss men who lack status and prestige. We are not slaves to sex roles dictated by evolution. Knowledge of our multifaceted desires and the costs and benefits of different strategies gives us the possibility of choosing from our wide-ranging mating menu. Understanding why sexual strategies have evolved and the adaptive problems they were designed to solve provides a powerful fulcrum for changing behavior. Just because humans have physiological adaptations that cause us to grow calluses in response to repeated friction to the skin, for example, it is not inevitable that humans must develop calluses. We can and do create more friction-free environments. Similarly, knowing that jealousy functions to protect paternity for men and the commitment of a mate for women brings into focus the conditions most likely to trigger jealousy, such as cues to sexual and emotional infidelity. In principle, just as we can create environments that minimize friction, we can create jealousy-free relationships. Those who practice polyamory strive to do precisely that, and they sometimes succeed, although it would be naive to think that shutting down such strong emotional circuits is simple or easy. Throughout this book, I have used empirical studies of mating as the building blocks for a theory of human mating psychology. Although I have not hesitated to speculate when warranted, it is anchored in evidence. Now, I will go beyond the scientific findings to describe what I see as their broader implications for social interactions in general and for relations between men and women in particular. Differences between the sexes. Insight into the relations between men and women must penetrate the riddle of gender similarities and differences. Because women and men alike have faced many similar adaptive challenges over evolutionary history, all humans share many psychological solutions. Both sexes sweat and shiver to regulate body temperature. Both sexes place a tremendous value on intelligence and dependability in a lifetime mate. Both seek long-term mates who are cooperative, trustworthy, and loyal. And both desire mates who will not inflict crushing costs on them. We are all of one species from the same planet. Recognition of our shared psychology and shared biology is one step toward producing harmony between the sexes. Against the backdrop of these shared adaptations, gender differences stand out in stark relief and demand explanation. Men and women differ in their psychology of mating solely and specifically in the domains where they have faced recurrently different adaptive problems over the long course of evolutionary history. Because ancestral women bore the lion's share of responsibility for nourishing their infants, women rather than men have lactating breasts. Because fertilization occurs internally within women, ancestral men confronted the problem of uncertainty over their fatherhood. As a consequence, men have evolved particular mate preferences for sexual loyalty, a psychology of jealousy centered on sexual infidelity, and a proclivity to withdraw commitment when cuckolded, all of which differ in design from the mating psychology of women. Some of these gender differences may be unpleasant. Many women dislike being treated as sex objects or valued for qualities largely beyond their control, such as youth and beauty, although some exploit these desires for their own ends. Many men dislike being treated as success objects or valued for the size of their investment portfolio and the importance of their status in a competitive world, although they too sometimes exploit these desires for their own ends. It is painful to be the wife of a man whose desire for sexual variety leads him to sexual infidelity. It is painful to be the husband of a woman whose desire for emotional closeness leads her to seek intimacy in the arms of another man. For both genders, it is distressing to be regarded as undesirable merely because one does not possess qualities that the other prefers in a mate. To assume that men and women are psychologically the same, as was generally done in traditional social science and still is in some out-of-date scientific circles, goes against what we now know about our evolved sexual psychology. Given the power of sexual selection, under which each sex competes for access to desirable mates, it would defy scientific logic to find that men and women were psychologically identical in aspects of mating about which they have faced different adaptive challenges for millions of years. At this point in history, we can no longer doubt that men and women differ in their preferences for a mate, primarily for youth and physical attractiveness in one case, and for status, maturity, success, protection, and economic resources in the other. Men and women also differ in their proclivities for casual sex without emotional involvement, in their desire for sexual variety, and in the nature of their sexual fantasies. Internet dating sites reveal modern expressions of our evolved sexual psychology. Tinder is deluged with more men than women who want casual sex. AshleyMadison.com appeals mostly to married men who seek sexual variety. SeekingArrangement.com caters to men with status and resources, and women with youth and beauty who want to parlay their respective assets. Men and women face different forms of interference with their preferred sexual strategies, and so differ in the kinds of events that trigger powerful emotions, such as anger and jealousy. Men and women differ in their tactics to attract mates, to keep mates, to eject mates, and to replace mates. These differences are universal features of our evolved strategies. They govern social interactions and fundamental relationships between individual women and men. Some people complain about these differences, or deny that they exist despite the scientific evidence, or wish that they would cease to exist. But wishes and denials will not make psychological gender differences disappear any more than they will make men's beard growth or women's breast development disappear. Harmony between men and women will be approached only when these denials are swept away and we squarely confront the differing desires and strategies of each. The evolutionary origins of patriarchy. The evolution of gender differences has unavoidable implications for feminism, as noted by feminist evolutionists such as Patricia Gawaty, Marianne Fisher-McDonnell, Jane Lancaster, Barbara Smuts, and Griet Vandemossen. According to the tenets of many feminists, patriarchy, defined roughly as the control of power and resources by men and the physical, psychological, and sexual subordination of women, is a major cause of the battle between the sexes. Oppression through subordination and the control of resources is said to be motivated by men's desire to control women's sexuality and reproduction. Human sexual strategies bear out major elements of this feminist viewpoint. Men indeed tend to control resources worldwide, although this is changing in many cultures that strive for economic equality. Individual men do oppress individual women, not only through their control of resources, but sometimes through sexual coercion and violence. Men's efforts to control women do center on women's sexuality and reproduction, and women as well as men often participate in perpetuating this oppression. An evolutionary perspective on sexual strategies provides valuable insights into the origins and maintenance of men's control of resources and men's attempts to control women's sexuality. A startling consequence of sexual strategies, for example, is that men's dominant control of resources worldwide can be traced in part to women's preferences in choosing a mate. These preferences, operating repeatedly over thousands of generations, have led women to favor men who possess status and resources, and to disfavor men who lack these assets. Ancestral men who failed to acquire such resources failed to attract women as mates. Women's preferences thus established a critical set of ground rules for men in their competition with one another. Modern men have inherited from their ancestors psychological mechanisms that not only give priority to resources and status, but also lead men to make great sacrifices and take great risks to attain resources and status. Men who fail to give these goals a high personal priority fail to attract mates. One of men's key strategies is to form coalitions with other men. These organized alliances give men the power to triumph over other men in their quest for resources and sexual access. In animals, strong coalitions are seen among baboons, chimpanzees, and dolphins. Male bottlenose dolphins, for example, form coalitions to herd females and thereby gain greater sexual access than would be possible by operating alone. Among chimpanzees, our closest primate relative, males form alliances to increase their chances of victory in physical contest with other chimpanzees, their status in the group hierarchy, and their sexual access to females. Rarely can a male chimpanzee become the dominant member of the troop without the aid of allies. Solitary males without coalition partners are at great risk of being brutally attacked and sometimes killed by males from other groups. Human males, too, form alliances for gaining resources such as large game, political power within the group, ways to defend against the aggression of other coalitions of men, and sexual access to women. The survival and reproductive benefits derived from these coalitional activities constituted tremendous selection pressure over human evolutionary history for men to form alliances with other men. Since ancestral women did not hunt large game, declare war on other tribes, or attempt to forcibly capture men from neighboring bands, they did not experience equivalent selection pressure to form coalitions. Although women do form coalitions with other women for the care of the young and for protection from sexually aggressive men, these are weakened whenever a woman leaves her kin group to live with her husband and his clan. The combination of strong coalitions among men and somewhat weaker coalitions among women, according to Barbara Smuts, may have contributed historically to men's dominance over women. My view is that women's preferences for a successful, ambitious, and resource-capable mate co-evolved with men's competitive mating strategies, which include risk-taking, status striving, derogation of competitors, coalition formation, and an array of individual efforts aimed at surpassing other men on the dimensions that women desire. The intertwining of these co-evolved mechanisms in men and women created the conditions for men to dominate in the domain of resources. The origins of men's control over resources is not simply an incidental historical footnote of passing curiosity. Rather, it has a profound bearing on the present because it reveals some of the primary causes of men's continuing control of resources. Women today continue to want men who have resources, and they continue to reject men who lack resources. These preferences are expressed repeatedly in dozens of studies conducted on tens of thousands of individuals in scores of countries worldwide. They are expressed countless times in everyday life. In any given year, the men whom women marry earn more than men of the same age whom women do not marry. Even professionally successful women who do not really need resources from a man are reluctant to settle for a mate who is less successful than they are. Women who earn more than their husbands seek divorce more often, although this trend appears to be changing, at least within America. Men continue to compete with other men to acquire the status and resources that make them desirable to women. The forces that originally caused the resource inequality between the genders, women's mate preferences and men's competitive strategies, are the same forces that contribute to maintaining resource inequality today. Feminists' and evolutionists' conclusions converge in their implication that men's efforts to control female sexuality lie at the core of their efforts to control women. Our evolved sexual strategies account for why this occurs and why control of women's sexuality is a central preoccupation of men. Over the course of human evolutionary history, men who failed to control women's sexuality, for example, by failing to attract a mate, failing to prevent cuckoldry, or failing to retain a mate, experienced lower reproductive success than men who succeeded in controlling women's sexuality. We come from a long and unbroken line of ancestral fathers who succeeded in obtaining mates, preventing their infidelity, and providing enough benefits to keep them from leaving. We also come from a long line of ancestral mothers who granted sexual access to men who provided beneficial resources. Feminist theory sometimes portrays men as being united with all other men in their common purpose of oppressing women. But the evolution of human mating suggests that this scenario cannot be true, because men and women compete primarily against members of their own gender. Men strive to control resources mainly at the expense of other men. Men deprive other men of their resources, exclude other men from positions of status and power, and derogate other men in order to make them less desirable to women. Indeed, the fact that nearly 70% of all homicides are inflicted by men on other men reveals the tip of the iceberg of the cost of competition to men. The fact that men, on average, die years earlier than women in every culture is further testimony to the penalties men pay for this struggle with other men. Women do not escape damage inflicted by members of their own sex. Women compete with each other for access to high-status men, have sex with other women's husbands, and lure men away from their wives. Mate poaching is a ubiquitous sexual strategy of our species. Women slander and denigrate their rivals, and are especially harsh toward women who pursue short-term sexual strategies. Women and men are both victims of the sexual strategies of their own gender, and so can hardly be said to be united with their own gender for some common goal. Moreover, both men and women benefit from the strategies of the opposite sex. Men lavish resources and protection on certain women, including their wives, their sisters, their daughters, and their mistresses. A woman's father, brothers, and sons all benefit from her selection of a mate who is flush with abundance. Contrary to the view that men or women are united with all members of their own sex for the purpose of oppressing the other sex, Each individual shares key interests with particular members of each sex and is in conflict with other members of each sex. Simple-minded views of a same-sex conspiracy have no foundation in reality. Although today men's sexual strategies contribute to their control over resources, the origins of their strategies cannot be separated from the evolution of women's desires. This analysis does not imply that we should blame women for the fact that men control resources, or blame men for their relentless pursuit of them. Rather, if harmony and equality are to be achieved, women and men both must be recognized as linked together in a spiraling causal chain of this co-evolutionary process. The process started long ago with the evolution of desire and continues to operate today through our strategies of mating. Diversity in mating strategies. Differences in the desires of men and women represent an important part of the diversity within the human species. But there is tremendous variability within each sex as well. Although more men than women are inclined to pursue purely casual sexual relationships, some men remain exclusively monogamous for life, and some women find polyamory, casual sex, or a mixed mating strategy preferable to monogamy. Some men seek women for their economic resources, and some women seek men for their looks, despite average trends to the contrary. Although most men and most women are sexually attracted to the other gender, some are attracted to members of their own gender, some to both, and some to neither. These differences within each gender cannot be dismissed as statistical flukes. They are crucial to understanding the rich repertoire of human mating strategies. Sexual diversity hinges on the individual circumstances that favor each person's choice of one strategy over another within their repertoire, a choice that may not be consciously articulated. For example, Aka men favor a mating strategy of high parental investment when they lack economic resources. Kung women favor serial mating in circumstances in which they are sufficiently desirable to continue attracting men who are willing to invest. Our mate value, how desirable we are in the mating market, influences the degree to which we can translate our desires into actual mating outcomes. No mating strategies, however deeply rooted in our evolved psychology, are invariably expressed regardless of social context or regardless of mate value. Knowledge of the contexts that facilitate and impede each sexual strategy aids our understanding of the diversity of mating behaviors within and between the genders. Knowledge of this diversity leads one to scrutinize certain value judgments for the selfish interests that may be driving them. In Western society, lifelong monogamy is often held up to be the ideal. Anyone who does not conform to this practice is regarded as deviant, immature, sinful, or a failure. Such a judgment may turn out to be a manifestation of the underlying sexual strategies of the person who upholds it. It is often in the best interests of a woman, for example, to convince others of the ideal of lifelong love. Women pursuing a short-term mating strategy pose a threat to monogamous women, siphoning off the resources, attention, and commitment of their long-term mates. It is often in the best interests of a man to convince others to adopt a monogamous strategy, even if he fails to follow it himself. Promiscuous men usurp single men's mating opportunities and threaten to poach already mated women. Our sexual morality, in short, is a key component of our evolved mating strategies. The short-term sexual strategies of both genders originate deep in human evolutionary history. Evolutionary accounts that emphasize the sexually indiscriminate man and the sexually coy woman grossly overstate the case. Just as men have the capacity for commitment as part of their strategic repertoire, women have the capacity for casual sex within theirs, and they in fact pursue it when they perceive that it is to their advantage to do so. For a century, After Darwin proposed the theory of sexual selection, it was vigorously resisted by male scientists, in part because they presumed that women were passive in the mating process. The proposal that women actively select their mates and that these selections constitute a powerful evolutionary force was thought to be science fiction rather than science fact. In the 1970s, scientists gradually came to accept the profound importance of female choice in the animal and insect world. And in the 1980s and 1990s, scientists began to document within our own species the active strategies that women pursue in choosing and competing for mates. But in the early decades of the 21st century, some stubborn holdouts continue to insist that women have but a single mating strategy, the pursuit of a long-term mate. Scientific evidence suggests otherwise. The fact that women who are engaged in casual sex as opposed to committed mating shift their mating desires to favor a man's extravagant lifestyle, his physical attractiveness, his masculine body, and even his risk-taking, cocky, bad boy qualities tells us that women have specific psychological mechanisms designed for short-term mating. The fact that women who have extramarital affairs often choose men who are higher in status than their husbands and tend to fall in love with their affair partners reveals that women have adaptations for mate switching. The fact that women shift to brief liaisons under predictable circumstances, such as a scarcity of men capable of investing in them or an unfavorable ratio of women to men, tells us that women have specific adaptations designed for shifting from long-term to short-term mating strategies. People often condemn as immoral the frequent switching of mates and other sexually uninhibited activities, and it often serves their interest to promulgate this view of morality to others. Our sexual morality stems from our evolved sexual strategies. From a scientific point of view, however, there is no moral justification for placing a premium on a single strategy within the collective human repertoire. Our human nature is found in the entire repertoire of our sexual strategies. Recognition of the rich diversity of desires takes us one step closer to harmony. Cultural variation in mating. Cultural variation represents one of the most fascinating and mysterious aspects of human diversity. Members of different societies differ dramatically on some qualities, as in their desire for virginity in a marriage partner. In China, in the 1980s, for example, nearly every individual, both male and female, viewed virginity as indispensable in a mate. Non-virgin Chinese were virtually unmarriageable. Chinese culture has changed, however, over the past 30 years. Although virginity is still valued, research from my lab found that its importance in mate preferences gradually declined. In Scandinavian countries, such as Sweden and Norway, chastity was, and still is, unimportant in a mate. This kind of cultural variability poses a puzzle for all theories of human mating. Evolutionary psychology focuses on early experiences, parenting practices, and other current social and ecological factors to explain variability in mating strategies. The psychologist Jay Belsky and his colleagues, for example, argue that harsh, rejecting, and inconsistent child-rearing practices, erratically provided resources and marital discord, foster in children a mating strategy of early reproduction and rapid turnover. In contrast, sensitive, supportive, and responsive child-rearing, combined with reliable resources and spousal harmony, foster in children a mating strategy of commitment marked by delayed reproduction and stable marital bonds. Children growing up in uncertain and unpredictable environments, in short, learn that they cannot rely on a single mate. They therefore opt for a sexual life that starts early and that inclines them to switch mates frequently. In contrast, children who grow up in stable homes with predictably investing parents opt for a strategy of permanent mating because they expect to attract a stable, high-investing mate. The evidence from children of divorced homes supports this theory. Such children reach puberty earlier, engage in intercourse earlier, and have more numerous sex partners than their peers from intact homes. The sensitivity of mating strategies to early experiences may help to explain the differences in the value placed on chastity across cultures. In China, for example, marriages historically have been lasting and divorce has been rare.